If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
In a down market like now, those rent control tenants can call the owner and say, hey, I want to reduce my rent or I'm going to move out. So a lot of owners are having to renegotiate the rent. So if somebody's over market right now, that's happened a lot in 2020.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
David Chesnosky specializes in multifamily leasing in the San Francisco Bay Area. He does quite a bit of sales, is also an active apartment investor himself, and works for one of the largest landlords in San Francisco. David, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great. It's great. You are in a niche market. You know, of course, California gets a lot of attention, and it's probably not always the attention that, I don't necessarily, you know, at least here in the middle of the country, it's not positive attention. Yeah. So I'd love to hear from you. You know, I'd love to hear the positive things that you can bring to the table about your market. And even before we get into that, though, would love more to hear where you started, where are you now, and how you got there. That's kind of my always, you know, flow of the show. So if you can give us kind of a brief intro there, and then we'll, you know, jump in more about your market.
Yeah, sounds good. No, happy to. So I'm actually from the San Francisco Bay Area. I grew up in a town called Burlingame down in the peninsula. It's about 20 minutes south of San Francisco. So my dad's from San Francisco. So we spent a lot of time in the city growing up. And so just jumping right in real estate, I got into real estate. I was in a different industry when I finished college. And then I got into real estate about 2004 in San Francisco. And I went to work for one of the largest landlords, or the largest landlord in San Francisco, managing actually a corporate apartment building. It was in a neighborhood called Nob Hill. So really good, a great location, close to the financial district, right behind Grace Cathedral Church, 61 unit apartment building. And they asked me if I wanted to be a general manager of the building. And I'd never done it before. And I'm like, yeah, might as well. I'll give it a shot. And I loved it. I did everything. I managed the building. So I managed the maintenance people and the maids that were cleaning the rooms, and I did the leasing and I did the accounting. So I did it all. And it was a great way to get my feet wet in commercial real estate, because it was an apartment building. It was an old 1920s apartment building that a couple of different owners over probably, I don't know, 15 years had slowly converted it into corporate housing, furnished housing. So I got into doing that. So it was leasing and property management. And then I stayed in it. And then I went to work in 2010 for the next largest landlord in San Francisco. And I ran their leasing for them. And we got up as big. It was me, myself, working on my own, doing all the leasing to start. And then we got up as big as, I don't know, maybe about 25 people in the department. We were renting 175 to 200 apartments every month. And then in May of 2019, I decided to go out on my own, and I became an agent with Compass Commercial in San Francisco. And my main focus, or part of my business, really is rentals, you know, leasing of multifamily apartments, so rent controlled apartments, non rent controlled apartments, and then I also do condos and single family homes, and then I do sales, and and I invest in apartment buildings in San Francisco as well.
Sounds like you got your hands full.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to stay busy, and I'm grateful and to be in San Francisco and in such a great market. Definitely, it's had challenges, you know, in the past year through the pandemic, but I think things are you know, they're slowly turning around, definitely slowly, and it's just, you know, I love San Francisco too. It's a beautiful city, and you know, and I'm from here, and so yeah, it's great.
That's awesome. Now, one of the things that we talked about before we kind of came on the air here was that rents are down. Is that, can you talk to us, you know, why is that? Have we seen a corresponding decrease in asset prices because of it? I guess, can you kind of give us the lowdown on that?
Yeah, it's so rents are definitely down. If you took an average of San Francisco rents, they're down about 20%. certain areas or neighborhoods have got hit harder than others. So the southern part of San Francisco, there's a neighborhood called South of Market where they've done a lot of, there's not a ton of multifamily property in that area. I mean, there is, but they built a lot of condos and actually newer apartment buildings. So I guess when I say not a lot of multifamily, I always refer to, you know, multifamily, there's rent controlled apartments in San Francisco. So any building built before 1979 is under San Francisco rent control. And then there's new apartment buildings that they, you know, new multifamily buildings that may have just been built in the past, you know, 5 or 10 years. So that area, they've done a lot of building of condominiums and newer apartment buildings. So that area has gotten hit probably the hardest with vacancy and rent loss. And then the more traditional neighborhoods on the northern side of the city, if somebody were to ask me, you know, what are the traditional most popular areas to live in San Francisco, what have always been the most, you know, popular areas to live in San Francisco, it'd be Pacific Heights, Cal Hollow, Marina, Nob Hill, Russian Hill, North Beach. Those have fared a little bit better, you know, maybe 15% drops in rent. So on average, about 20%. And it's just, you know, it's people, once the pandemic hit and they started announcing, well, this could last until June. And then pretty quickly it turned into, oh, this is going to last until the end of the year in terms of offices reopening, I should say, you know, and then it was, it happened pretty quickly. And then all of a sudden it was summer 2021. So, you know, so a lot of people were like, well, it's April or May. I don't have to be back in the office for a year or over a year. And some companies, some of the tech companies in San Francisco started announcing you can work from home indefinitely. So a lot of people, I think, took that opportunity to just move, to leave. And then, you know, then towards the, I guess, maybe the end of the year or a little bit before the end of the year, a lot of companies, you know, started saying that they're going to move their headquarters also. So there's been some of that. So I think that just a lot of people moving out, able to work from different parts of the country, different parts of the state. You know, I mean, a lot of people went up to Tahoe, which is only 3.5 hours away from San Francisco. Some people went down to LA. So yeah, you just had a lot of people moving and just a change of a office, you know, I guess, environment where a lot more people can work from home. And so they just figured that they would move. And yeah, rents, rents skyrocketed in San Francisco. I mean, I started, 2004. So I've went through a couple dips. You know, I went through the 2009, you know, economy when it crashed and, you know, rents came down about 10, 15%, you know, probably in 2009, 2010. But by 2011, they were already back up to normal levels. And then from there, it just skyrocketed. You know, it was just, there was the simplest way to explain it, why rents got so high, lack of supply and tons of jobs in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. You know, and you had a lot of the tech companies, the larger tech companies, Google, Facebook, you know, Apple, LinkedIn, that have their offices actually about 45 minutes to an hour south of San Francisco. And so but a lot of their employees want to live in San Francisco. So they're running shuttle buses between their campuses in San Francisco. And it was just, it was kind of a storm, I guess you say. I don't want to say a quiet storm, but a storm of people that wanted to live in the city. And there wasn't enough supply and rent went way up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the basic economics, supply and demand. What have prices done with a decrease, you know, 20% decrease in rents? You would think prices have fallen. Is that the case?
Yeah. So they've fallen. So it really, you know, it really depends, like I said, on the product type. So when I say rent controlled apartments, non-rent controlled apartments, condos, it really depends on a lot of things. Location of the unit, of course, you know, the number one, right? Real estate, location. So a great location, a unique apartment. So unique features, a view of the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, top floor, access, you know, a private yard, a private patio, balcony, laundry and unit, you know, remodeled really nice, more square footage, you know, all those things factor into how units are renting. I think landlords in San Francisco, and whether that's a condo or a rent controlled apartment or a non-rent controlled apartment, I think in San Francisco, I hate to, a lot of landlords got spoiled. You know, they were putting, from, like I said, it just from 2011 until 2020, you know, the beginning of 2020, rents just skyrocketed. And I think a lot of landlords got spoiled. They were putting, you know, marginal or even below average product on the market and getting incredible rents. And they're renting fast, you know, and people weren't really, that picky. They weren't complaining. They're just like, okay, I guess it's just what I have to take. And this is how it is. And, you know, and it's different now. People are trying to put those same, you know, types of product on the market where, you know, the kitchens and bathrooms are old, 15, 20, 25 years old, you know, that there's carpet sometimes, you know, and those ones, people aren't going for it. You know, they're just sitting, and rents have to come way down. So that's kind of what's going on. So like I said, if you still have a really nice location and it's remodeled really nice and owners have taken care of it and invested in it, the rents, they've come down, but, you know, like I said, 10 to 15%. You have other ones that they've never really invested any money in the unit. Those ones, they're taking a long time to rent and rents really have to drop until you get somebody to rent it.
Right. Yeah. That's really interesting. What are some things? Talk to us about the rent control. I know this is something I hadn't heard before, was that it's rent controlled 1979 and before.
Yeah. Any multifamily building, not homes, not condos, any multifamily apartment building built before 79 is under San Francisco rent control.
Okay. So what, how much product do you have on the market that's 1979 and after, or I guess 1980 and after?
A lot. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I thought you were saying before. A lot of rent control product built before 79.
Right.
After 80, probably about, let's see, if we're saying just apartment product, just apartment buildings built, not condos and, you know, not single family homes.
Right.
I would probably say, you know, and I should know this answer, but it's not that much.
Right.
I mean, at a multifamily, I'm going to say maybe 20% of it is okay. Maybe non-rent controlled. And, you know, and this is just for multifamily. Like I said, yeah, there's rent control on the large majority of multifamily buildings in the city.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, because you guys have some geographic barriers that kind of keep you from having urban sprawl.
Totally.
So you were probably already almost built, you know, to as far as you could build come 1980 anyway.
So exactly. Yeah. And height limits and zone restrictions and regulations and, you know, which I'll say, you know, I want, you know, as a leasing broker and as a commercial, you know, agent, I want more supply for people. I want more supply and more affordable housing for people,
right.
But it's just, it's tough to build. And like I said, and with a lot of restrictions also, which is kind of a, you know, like that's the thing about San Francisco is I always say it's, you know, I mean, it's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, like I said, I would love to be able to have more affordable housing for people. I think it's definitely the right thing to do. And then on the other hand, a lot of those restrictions and the height limits and everything have kept San Francisco really beautiful. Like if you walk around in these neighborhoods I live in a neighborhood called Pacific Heights, it's beautiful. You walk around, you see some of these homes and buildings and, you know, and it's like, that's part of the character of San Francisco because they were strict for a long time. But yeah, a lot of demand of people that wanted to live here and not enough supply and prices go up.
What do you see? And maybe this is the case. I'm answering my own question because if 80% of the supply is rent controlled, I was going to say, it seems like people, especially people who are kind of legacy rent control renters, don't want to let go of those units at whatever prices they're set at. Right. So I would think your move out would be less in more rent controlled, stricter rent controls. People then know that they're going to go to somewhere else, going to cost them maybe potentially a lot more to
Correct.
Get their next lease.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you look at the turnover of an apartment building, it's the majority of the units that are turning are people that have lived there for the past, you know, say 2 to 4 years.
Right.
That's
sure.
The majority. And then as their length of tenancy goes up, the longer they live there, the less percentage of those people are moving out.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that would kind of make sense. And in its own odd, kind of backwards way, it keeps prices higher for the landlord than
Right.
it would if everybody's moving out and then they're, you know, signing new leases at 20% under what they were a year ago.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Right. You don't hear that very often.
No, I know. Yeah. No, it's just, I've lived in, you know, so I like I said, I got into property management and leasing. So I've, you know, managed buildings before and, it's for tenants, it's a good thing. It is a good thing. You know,
right.
there's, I've, you know, like I said, I've managed buildings and lived in these buildings and met the people that at if they didn't have rent control, they probably wouldn't be able to live in San Francisco. And you know, and they're good people, and they contribute to the city, and you know, and of course, and pay their taxes. And so, yeah, but it's just, so it's just something that owners, you know, of rent control buildings, they just have to deal with it, you know. And the good thing about, well, I mean, for an owner, since we're talking about owners, I mean, on rent control properties, if someone does eventually move out, you know, however long that is, they can mark the market or mark the unit to market rates.
Right.
There's no limit on there. So, you know, on how much they can raise after somebody moves out. But so you have people that live in building. Like I show apartments sometimes, and people ask me like, what's the tenant profile? And I'm in a rent control building. You could have, well, first of all, we're fair with everybody. You know, anybody that applies and gets approved can live there. Sure. But you have people that have lived there for 30 years and people that just moved in a month ago. You know, so.
Right. That's interesting. Are rent control buildings changing hands?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Not so much right now. When investors are looking at rent control properties, they're looking at the future of the investment. So they're underwriting it saying, you know, okay, here's what the rents are today. Here's what they could be, you know, in right 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years down the road. And they're looking also at somebody that's lived there for 10 years and they're paying X amount of rent. Well, if they end up moving in 3 years, you know, this is what that we can mark up the rent to, you know, legally, of course, yeah, after they move out. And if we remodel it, and if we add laundry in unit and fix it up. So, they change hands, and it's like I said, it's mainly in the neighborhoods of San Francisco. I mean, there's a lot of different neighborhoods in San Francisco. You're right. It's a small geographic area, 7 miles by 7 miles. But there's institutional investors. There's not a ton of them in San Francisco, but there is. And then there's a lot of, in San Francisco, there's a lot of what we call mom and pop owners. So families, you know, that have owned a building for 60 years. It's been in their family, you know, 50, 60, 70 years sometimes. And they own one building or they own two buildings. There's tons of, and you know, whether it's a 4-unit building or a 30-unit building, there's a lot of those owners of multifamily properties in San Francisco.
Interesting. So would you say that people who invest in these rent control buildings, that they're more appreciation plays and not necessarily cash flow plays?
Correct. Yep.
That's really interesting. And I wonder how that's, I guess, you know, how not how they feel, because that's not fair. I mean, we've all made decisions and go, oh, well, that didn't work out as planned, but I wonder how they are adjusting with the decrease in rents, I guess. But I guess if they're also buying a rent-controlled building, their prices are, I mean, they're kind of what they are. They knew that going in.
Yeah, some, you know, they might have some people that well, I know a lot of things that are going on right now is people are, so that's the thing with rent control is that somebody moves in, you can only raise the rent on average about 1.5% every 12 months after their initial 12-month term is up. And then they just roll, you know, it's implied tenancy, they're just rolling month to month, and you can only raise the rent about 1.5% every 12 months. But in a normal market or an up market, you can only raise that much. In a down market like now, those rent control tenants can call the owner and say, hey, I want to reduce my rent or I'm going to move out. So a lot of owners are having to renegotiate the rent. So if somebody's over market right now, that's happened a lot in 2020. If they're thinking about moving, they can call their owner and they can renegotiate the rent, sign a new lease, and then they're locked in now on that lower rent. And so, yeah, so that's happening. But then on the flip side, there could be, you know, I've heard of stories of people that, yeah, were probably paying below market and they lived there for a long time and they just decided to move for whatever reason, you know, life changes. They just wanted to. And so now they were there for X amount of years, you know, whatever, let's say I call it 10 years. So they're below market. So that owner now gets that unit back and remodels it, puts it back on the market, and now is getting a higher rent than that other person was paying. So there's kind of a, you know, and so I think in the last downturn, I think there was a lot of that, and kind of, it was, you know, landlords didn't get hit as hard. I think this is different this time. You know, I think this rents have just come down way too much. So, to answer your question, what do they do? Nothing. Hold on to, wait, hold, right. Don't sell. I mean, like, yeah. And then eventually it'll come back, you know, and, you know, I don't know how long it would take if it ever comes back to the levels it was before in like 2019. We kind of hit a peak in like 2018, 2019, like, yeah, or like 2017, 2018, 2019 was kind of, I didn't see, rents weren't rising that much. They're kind of, but they were already high. So they were already at a really high level. And then they kind of plateaued. You know, sometimes, like I said, depending on the unit, you get a little bit more, maybe, you know, maybe even, but never really that much less. They kind of, but like I said, and they were just, you know, that's when they were, they rents had surpassed New York City. You know, like I remember when I was, it was like maybe 2011, 2012, 2013, people started talking like, oh, rents are, it's more expensive in San Francisco than New York. And I'm like, no way, you know, and then it happened eventually, you know, I mean, maybe not the super, maybe not like areas like Tribeca in New York City. I'm sure there's still really, really, really beautiful, you know, expensive apartments there that might not get as much rent in San Francisco, but yeah, I mean, overall as a city, it's at the average rent for, you know, studios, one bedrooms, two bedrooms surpassed New York. And then they kind of just, they kind of plateaued, but they were, you know, they were high and then they've taken a big hit. So
that's interesting. That's interesting. David, we're running out of time. Let's jump into the final four here.
Okay.
What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I would say don't wait and start small. You know, just, you know, if you got however much money you have, whatever you can afford and figure out a way to invest it. You know, I invested in a small little four unit apartment building when I was starting out. Then I went, you know, and recently, you know, did a little six unit apartment building. And, you know, I found people that were just syndicating deals and I was able to, you know, to put in a small, they had limits, you know, a lot of times. And, you know, I mean, like it was people that I knew and was also friends of mine too, but I just said, hey, I can't afford your limit. Can I do a little less? And they're like, yeah, we can do it. We'll do it. And, you know, I had a small little piece of the pie and it worked out great. And I could say that I'm in, you know, investing in apartment buildings and it felt good. And they turned out, it turned out to be great investments, you know, because I mean, this is like, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Oh yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's great timing. When, or what is one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm trying to read more books and listen to more podcasts. So now I'm on my Tom Brady kick because, you know, he's from the Bay Area. He actually grew up in San Mateo, which is right next to Burlingame. And I just think it's incredible what he's done. And I think he's an incredible person. So I'm trying to, you know, he hasn't done a lot of interviews or anything, but I'm just, you know, it's pretty cool recently to listen to a lot of things that he says. And, you know, I see certain things on social media sometimes. So that's probably number one is just trying to, you know, make sure that I'm, you know, either listening to more audiobooks, listening to podcasts and reading more.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Well, first thing popped in my head is I am growing my team now. So I'm trying to hire people, train them, teach them everything that I'd learned over the past, you know, 16, 17 years being in leasing and property management and multifamily and kind of, you know, letting them, helping them grow, trying to help them grow and be a good leader and a good mentor. And that's probably number one. And I have a dog who I adopted from the SPCA. So I donate to the SPCA and I always try and tell people to adopt their dogs and not, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. There's plenty of critters out there that need lots of love, man.
Right,
so
right.
That's, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. David, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
You can go to my website, which is www.rentingsf.co, not .com. Or Instagram is also, I'm at RentingSF. So RENTINGSF. Those are probably the two easiest ways. And then, you know, either one, you can shoot me a message on Instagram or my website. It's got my email, my phone number.
Awesome. David, thank you for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.